Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TogleTheater.com. Yes, we're going inside Broadway. And by the way, before we get to the Broadway stuff, I do want to say about Shalom Dammit, the Rabbi's show, that we do now know what the times are going to be on Long Island Cablevision. This is really, really cool. The Rabbi asked for it, and God answered his prayers. You can catch, starting maybe this week, but certainly starting next week, Friday afternoons. It's the perfect thing for Shabbos. 3 o'clock, and then again at 3:30, both on channel 115 on Long Island Cablevision. So you get a double dose of the Rebbe.
A whole hour?
A whole hour. Can you believe it? Right, just leave your channel right there. 3 and 3:30, Fridays.
Leave your channel? Leave your television.
Huh? Well, you only because there are two public access channels on Long Island Cablevision, and one of them is we couldn't get on channel 20, unfortunately. But they gave us a wonderful time slot on channel 115. So catch Shalom Dammit
in high def.
And of course you can. He's tone deaf. I don't know if he's high def, but you
can. C H A I def.
What's that?
High def.
High def. He's. See, Jeff took a nap this afternoon, and that makes all the difference when he gets on the he's bushy-tailed, he's bright-eyed, he's contributing. It's so great. What?
I sundown, just like my Alzheimer's.
No, but it's cool, because half the time, especially this time of night, we're doing our stuff, and Jeff is at the microphone, literally, his eyes close, and his head hits the microphone. You hear it go.
Yeah, but that's because you're so boring.
Thank you.
But we've had two wonderful guests. I can't tell you how excited I was that Martin Vinovic was calling in. And then
I didn't realize you were such a fan.
I like him a lot.
Yeah.
And I always have. And then this documentary, the little
red truck. Yeah.
I love that.
It's a nice documentary. When I finish it, I'll give it to you.
I cannot wait to see that. I don't care. I'll pay $19.99 to see it. I think it just sounds so adorable.
It's very sweet.
I really want them to get nominated for an Academy Award.
We haven't seen the movie yet.
Yeah, but I don't care because then they can say Dave's gone by and hi Jeff. I don't know.
Yeah, oh yeah, I can just see that when they're at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
That's what
they're thanking people. They'll remember us.
Hi Jeff Goodman, thanks for getting us nominated.
Well, you know what? If you get that DVD to your friend, you never know. He might be instrumental if he's a voter. Maybe.
Yeah. But, anyway.
Anywho.
But they were just so wonderful. We've had two great interviews.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
I agree.
And now we're inside Broadway with someplace
Yay!
We've never been past 1 o'clock.
Well, it's only 12:40 now.
Oh, but believe me, we're going to be way inside Broadway past 1
o'clock. Oh, well, you know, if you know Jeff and myself, folks, you know that we can talk about Broadway on and on and on forever. We'll try and keep it succinct, but... Man, this is the time. This is when Broadway is just going nuts. Even though we've got a recession, even though it's been a tough year, even though prices are high.
We've got lots of plays.
There's just a lot of stuff going on because, you know, the end of the Broadway season is the last day of April, April 30th. So nothing can open after that and still be considered for this year's Tonys. Everything has to be opened by April 30th. So all the people who review theater, who write about theater, are scampering all around town to catch all the new Broadway shows and the off-Broadway ones, too, all within, like, the six-week time frame from the middle of March. And we're all punch drunk, and you run into them from show to show, and their eyes are glazed. And what are you seeing? I don't remember. What are you seeing tomorrow? I don't know. Something. It's just the way we all are.
What's
this time of year.
What's next week? Four shows. Where? I don't know.
They don't know. They just know it's somewhere between 41st and 51st Street. Somewhere in that realm. But anyway.
And the occasional off-Broadway that goes, oh, we didn't know we couldn't open it this time.
We really wish that there weren't any off-Broadway shows opening during the month of April. It would make life a lot easier. Not to have to worry about
that.
But
you know what the problem is? You have the Drama Desk and the Out of Critics Circle. They want to get open. They want to get nominated there.
Mm.
So it's almost, and it's very similar deadlines. Well, I think they're even earlier.
We know the people who run and vote for the. In fact, I'm a member of the Critics Circle and the Drama Desk. But the people who are the nominators, they're going to 7 or 8 shows a week every week for about 6 weeks, and people would go, "Wow, isn't that the most wonderful, amazing thing?" Yeah,
no.
It is. Except they have day jobs, or at least they did until the recession. And it's exhausting. It's a lot. And you have to keep all that in your head. And these people are also writing reviews, not to mention voting. So it's quite a bit. Mm. But anyway, all I say this is in preference to explaining that this is the big time for Broadway. This is when it's all happening. So all the shows are opening or going to open in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And pretty exciting, like one of the shows that's going to be opening this week is a rock musical called Rock of Ages. Have you heard about this one, Jeff?
Yes, I have.
Uh-oh. What have you heard? Tell me.
I don't know, but I'm not really looking forward to it.
That's the nice thing about this show. We can be honest. well, Dig, what it is, apparently they're doing it a little funny and
but
a little
campy. But
I'm hoping
to be pleasantly surprised.
Well, you never. It might be a Xanadu, because they're trying to go for a funny book, but they're using the music of Styx, Journey, Bon Jovi, Twisted Sister, all the bands that I basically hated throughout the 1980s, the big hair and metalloid bands.
Right, right.
And they're putting a story to it. I guess that's what they do nowadays, from Mamma Mia to Moving Out to Good Vibrations.
To Jersey Boys.
Well, to Jersey Boys. So there you go. The songs are already written. Half the audience goes in there knowing what the songs are, so why not? So now they're doing it with this thing called Rock of Ages at the Brooks Atkinson Theater. It opens on Tuesday. And
it had a healthy run off-Broadway, didn't it? Wasn't this the one that
was? That's right, you're right. It is a move from off-Broadway. So it apparently has some champions. Maybe it's really cute. It's probably going to be quite loud.
I just had my only thing was because of the same. I didn't like the bands. I'm, you know,
right, well.
Even though I like Jump, you know, they do Jump, don't they? Jump.
Van Halen, yeah. The thing is, now dig this. I'm titling this, remember we were doing 6 Degrees of Leo Burmester before?
Yes.
Now let's talk about 6 Degrees of Cheyenne Jackson.
Oh, I like Cheyenne Jackson.
How is he involved, do you say?
How is he involved?
Cheyenne Jackson was in Xanadu. Why?
This is true, because
he took over for James Carpinello.
Who broke his leg or something.
Right, he was in rehearsal for, or he was almost previewing, I think,
yeah,
in Xanadu. Broke his leg, they had to take him out, and then James Carpinello came, you know, went in instead.
No, you mean Cheyenne Jackson went in instead.
Excuse me, Cheyenne Jackson went in instead. Now, James Carpinello is going to be starring in Rock of Ages.
Somewhere did Cheyenne Jackson break a leg?
Let's see, well, how did Jackson figure in? Hmm. When I wrote this out, Oh, because we're going to be mentioning Cheyenne Jackson a little bit later. That's why I'm so confused.
Dave makes no sense. Dave makes no sense. This is the part of the show where Dave makes no sense.
Now Carpinello's in Broadway. Okay, whatever. Something like that. We'll fix it in post. Now, speaking of Broadway shows, happy first anniversary to Nellie Forbush and Captain Emile Debeck. South Pacific celebrates its 1 year anniversary on Broadway.
Have they lost any cast members?
Well, yeah, because Kelly O'Hara is out on baby leave, or having a baby leave. And so she's going to be out for a few months, and she's coming back. You know, they got it's 6 degrees of grief.
She's having a baby leave her.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually. Laura Osnes,
oh,
who was in the revival of Grease that we were kind of making fun of,
mm-hmm,
she's playing Nellie Forbush, a little young, don't you think, for Nellie Forbush until Kelly O'Hara gets back. But Paolo Zott is back playing Emile. He was the opera singer.
He was out?
Yeah, I think he took a couple of weeks vacation or something like that.
How dare he!
But congratulations!
After
it is
we gave
one of
the Tony Award and everything.
He did get the Tony. Yeah, it is one of the loveliest revivals in recent memory. It's really a terrific show. So, granted,
you know,
I might want to wait until Kelly O'Hara gets back if I were going to see it. But
you
it's still probably
needs?
Terrific, huh?
You know what this show needs?
What?
Martin Vindevic.
Well, he auditioned for it.
Well, they can always call him back.
Right. Sorry, I'm eating cheese here, later.
Oh, you cheese eater.
See, the first hour of Dave's gone by. Everybody's on good behavior. Everything's really succinct and put together. After midnight, if we're still on the air, you know, we let our freak flags fly. But anyway, happy birthday happy anniversary to South Pacific. Also, some news of a show that I'm really excited that is coming to Broadway. We were talking about Chicago before. That was an Encores presentation.
Yes.
You know what? Tell the people what Encores is.
Encores is a group of people who put together shows that are basically, they have the book in front of them, they have the score in front of them, they do it kind of from stools, and then they act a
it's
little
bit. It's a concert
bit.
Version. In other words, they might be wearing costumes, they might have a little bit of movement, but it's not a fully produced show. A lot of times they're even off book now. They're not necessarily reading. Because when they first started, it was just supposed to be like concert, like musicals and Mufti at the York Theater. Now it's become more of a commercial thing and bigger tickets, so they do it a little bit more staged. Well, a weekend ago, they brought back Finian's Rainbow in a very small concert version, and the critics loved it, the audiences loved it, so guess what's happening?
It's coming to Broadway.
Finian's Rainbow, which has not been on Broadway in my, I wouldn't say in my lifetime, but in my theater-going lifetime, hasn't been back.
It's been threatened to be back a couple of times.
Well, yeah, because Irish Rep did it a couple of years ago in a very well-received production, too, and that almost went further but didn't.
See, my only problem with that is I just don't like the fact that they have these half-directed musicals. Like Chicago. I love Chicago.
Right.
But this production of Chicago is only, it's half done. It's not a full show. And I feel somehow to pay Broadway ticket prices and not get this full show. I wouldn't mind if they took this and said, okay, oh, look, there's a market for Finian's Rainbow. Let's restage it, use the same people, and we'll get it done.
They are going to expand it. I mean, people are not going to be sitting there with scripts. But
the way they expanded Chicago, I just didn't feel
it wasn't enough for that. What else did another Encore show come to Broadway between Chicago and this? Did any other make it there? Was
sure
it a Wonderful Town, maybe, or something like that?
Wonderful Town did, but it was fully done.
Exactly. So maybe they'll do that with Finian. Maybe.
I hope so.
So, anyway, the producers
are involved?
The
Weisslers?
No, it's producers David Richenthal, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Jack Bertel. And they say they're going to do a full production in fall of 2009. And do you know who was in this Finian's Rainbow when they did it off, when they did the Encores version?
I'll bet you Cheyenne Jackson was.
There's your 6 degrees of Cheyenne Jackson right there. So he's going into Broadway in Finian's Rainbow in the fall.
There's no degrees there. Where is the James Corpanello in this?
Well, because he's in Rock of Ages now. And they were both involved in Xanadu. Oh, whatever. I tried.
Not working.
Well, anyway, I've never seen Finian's Rainbow except for the movie. So I'm very excited about that coming to Broadway. Let's hear a song from the original cast album of Finian's Rainbow, and then we'll be back with some reviews.
Who's singing this?
Well, this is the song, How Are Things in Glacamora? So right. Who is the original?
I don't know. That's why I asked you.
I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll find out.
Try and find out. And here is a little Mora of Finian's Rainbow. Broadway the best way, ladies and gentlemen. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway. One thing I forgot to mention in the opening part of Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By is the show that I'll be doing come May.
This is 6 degrees of David Leftwood.
That's right, because, you know, for the past few weeks I've been doing this cabaret show for StageBuddy.com. It was called StageBuddy.com's Weekly Night Live, and it had this mix of performers, of magicians and stand-up comedians and cabaret singers and Broadway actors and theater critics. It was a lot of fun, and we got a lot of great feedback on it. So we're going to revamp it a little bit, and once I get back from Los Angeles, starting on May 5th, I'm going to do more of a talk show, more of what old Dave is used to, and a little bit less of the ringmaster emceeing. And it'll be a show called Stage Buddy Talk, and I'll be talking to people in the theater and film business, casting directors, producers, actors, writers, theater critics and press agents, all the folks involved in really making all this stuff happen, directors, film directors, and cinematographers, stuff like that. It's going to be Tuesday nights, 7 o'clock, at the Players Theater on McDougal Street, 115 McDougal Street between Bleecker and West 3rd in Greenwich Village. It's going to be absolutely great. It's only $5 to get in. And then you can stick around and see all the other Stage Buddy shows that they're doing the rest of the evening. Because after I'm done, my show is an hour. And then there'll be more of like an open mic thing and more entertainment. So that $5 gets you in for the whole night of entertainment in this really sweet 199-seat theater right down in the Village, the Players Theater. But remember, it's not this month. It starts May 5th, Tuesday nights, 7 o'clock, Stage Buddy Talk with me, Dave. Yay!
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
What are you going to California for?
Oh, well, thank you, Jeff, for asking and chomping into the microphone with your carrots. But I'm so glad you're eating carrots and cheese as opposed to some of the other stuff.
Hey.
I mean it. Keep eating the carrots. It's good. Because, you know, wait, there's no points for carrots and Weight Watchers.
All right, but let's talk about California.
Not to blow my horn, not to toot my horn or anything like that.
I think it's terrific what's going on.
It is pretty terrific. The National Endowment for the Arts was kind enough to accept my application for a Journalism Institute fellowship that they do. I think they do them twice a year.
Them's big words, Dave.
I know. It's more of a boot camp for arts journalists. Let's put it that way. And it's kind of an all expenses paid
by the National Endowment of the Arts
working vacation. Not much of a vacation. It's more working, where you go down to Los Angeles, you talk and really get to be with a bunch of other journalists and people who write about the theater and movies and media and art criticism. And at the same time, you're also seeing a lot of theater, going to museums, being on panels, meeting with folks who are very, very big in the business. Either they're writers who've been doing it for many, many years, or the artists themselves. So it's a lot like the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center. People are somewhat familiar with that. You go down there for about 10 days, and you're just immersed in what the creative people are doing out in Los Angeles, and also how the writers and journalists are responding to it. And also the big talk is, you know, where the hell is arts journalism going when there aren't going to be any more newspapers? And the whole idea, the whole concept of what is journalism is changing before our eyes, dying or at least maybe transforming into something else. So it's actually a real watershed kind of time, and I'm looking forward to coming out of that with new ideas and maybe recharge my batteries or go in a whole different direction. So I thank the National Endowment for the Arts for allowing me the opportunity to go there and be part of this, because I will say, and I will own up to this completely, I can say, oh, I'm so wonderful, and they love my application, and of course they wanted me. You know, I'm on the radio, and I co-published Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, and I used to be the editor-in-chief of Playbill.com, and blah, blah, blah. When the truth is, despite all of this, over the years I was rejected 4 times
but congratulations
for this fellowship.
On getting this one.
Well, thank you, man.
I think it's impressive. I mean, with the arts funding going down.
No, I mean, I'm very grateful and I'm thrilled. And when I saw the email, and they sent me an email, I was so shocked because I said, they're writing back. And I wasn't even going to apply this time. I really wasn't. And I had it in my emails, and a week before, I was like, oh, what the heck? And I even went so far as to send it priority or express mail just to make sure it made the deadline. I said, you know what? And I dashed it off almost. I said, you know what? I'm going to tell the truth, because you have to write a personal essay to go with your application and your resume and your clips and blah, blah, blah. They want a personal essay. And I just, you know what? I'm going to just tell the truth about what a rotten situation everybody's in right now, and that you know, theater is in tough shape and arts journalism is in much worse shape, and that the only people who are really going to be doing arts journalism anymore are collectors and collators, because everybody's blogging and, you know, nobody's going to be paying anymore. I just, you know, vomiting out my feelings.
What you don't know is when you get at LAX, they go shoot you. Oh, that's him.
No, but what it was I was also, unlike the other times when I wrote the essay, I really felt it. I wasn't trying to be impressive. I wasn't trying to say, oh, you know, I'm so great, and these are the many things I'm going to do when I get to Los Angeles. This was really about, okay, you asked me about the state of arts journalism. Let me tell you. Let me just, you know, how burned out I am. And I think that came across in a previous one too, but this time I just let it fly. And then I read it over after I'd been accepted. I read over the thing that I sent them. I was like, damn, this was good. This really was the best letter that I ever sent them. Because I felt free. I wasn't shackled by the idea of writing a college essay. It was more like, okay, I'm going to tell you where it's at, and I'm going to be real honest and open about it. So
good for you, Dave.
But again, seeing that email, I almost didn't read it. I was like, oh, here's my rejection letter from the NEA again. And I said, what the hell, let me see. Tell me that there were so many wonderful applicants that we couldn't have them all, but we thank you and we hope that you pursue and you know, do this again next time we have an application. And I opened it up and almost fell out of my chair. Literally, just went, you know, started jumping around the room screaming.
Were the potatoes happy?
The potatoes were happy. The frogs were happy. My earwax was happy. Now, people who have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, yeah, go back and listen to some older episodes of the show, and you'll
they've had lots of potatoes.
Yes. So, again, that's why I'm going to Los Angeles for a week and a half to immerse myself in L.A. culture, courtesy of the thing that, who was it, Reagan and some other people wanted to destroy, the National Endowment for the Arts. So your tax dollars are not just paying for Bernie Madoff, and not just paying for GM, and not just paying for bailouts to the banks.
Now they're paying for
me to go down to Los Angeles and watch Mauritius and Our Town.
Good for you, Dave. You just got another two people to go to LAX with guns.
Thank you. Yeah, my luck will turn into Binghamton, you know.
But hey, you know, I went to school in Binghamton. I graduated from Binghton.
How far away is SUNY Binghamton from where that happened?
It's not too far. SUNY Binghamton is actually in Vestal, New York, off of, I don't know, it's like a main parkway, but it's only 5-10 minutes away.
Well, these are the Vestal years of our lives. Thank you.
Guess you sure what the NEA wanted you?
Hey, you know what time it is, Jeff?
It's time to tell the people they're listening to WGBB reports. Your source for information and perspiration.
And you are listening to Dave's Gone By, the extra, extra, extra lengthy edition of the show. Thank you so much, by the way, to James and Michelle of the Gospel shows that are normally here on Sunday nights. They're, I guess, taking the night off. So we're here at the mics and very happy to be here.
They're taking it easy.
I'm Jeff. I'm not Jeff Goodman. You're Jeff Goodman. I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Speaking of teasing, what?
You're taking it tizzy. Taking it easy.
Oh, taking the heat, yeah. Well, kind of, except we're working pretty hard here at the mic, and we're doing Inside Broadway, part two now. We're going to talk about some theater.
This is part three.
Well, that didn't really... Okay, part three. That didn't really count as stuff. Oh. I was just bragging about my trip to L.A., so there. Which I'll tell you all about. Oh, and by the way, this would be a good time to mention that I will not be here. Dave's Gone By won't be on the air next Sunday, the Sunday after that, or the 26th. This is going to be our last Sunday in
it's
April.
It's going
here.
To be a April hiatus.
April hiatus, because I'm going away. But May will be back with new episodes. Oh, this is not Groundhog Day. We're not going to do this over and over again. Oh, Jeff, I see it in your eyes. You're getting a little sleepy. Wake up.
I know. Wow, you do see that.
Because we got to do some theater reviews
time
here.
Time for another carrot stick.
Do it up. Okay. Well, like everybody else, we've been seeing a bunch of shows this time of year, and one of them is the new Broadway comedy, God of Carnage. It's a dark comedy by Yasmina Reza, best known for the big sleeper Broadway hit Art. Almost a decade ago. Remember Art? That was the show about the guy who buys a white... all white paintings, spends a whole bunch of money on it, and his longtime friends who think they know him backwards and forwards look at him and have kind of a different opinion of him now because he's just spent thousands of dollars on a painting that they have no clue why it's a big white canvas. Cute show. Overlong for what it is. They basically set up the situation and then it just goes and goes and winds down like a top losing its steam. Well, I have to say, it's kind of the same thing with Reza's new play, God of Carnage. This is, here's the situation. It's more like a situation comedy now than TV situation comedies, which have a lot more plot. You know, Seinfeld took sitcoms in a whole different direction and Scrubs, and now they have three different plots working at the same time, and there's all this going on. Now on Broadway, it's much more of what we would consider a situation comedy. You plunk people into a room, there's a situation, and they yell at each other for 90 minutes. Well, at least that's what Gog of Carnage is. What happens is two couples, one a bit of a higher class, although they both make a decent living, and they have their kids in a rather tony, nice school. And young kids, little children, well, one kid has misbehaved and hit the other kid in the face with a stick and knocked a tooth or two out and made the other kid really cry and sad. So the parents, one set of parents of the victim, have invited the other set of parents over to discuss over coffee what to do and how to approach it and how to get the kids together and to make, you know, make nice and make sure that the kid is punished but in the right way and that perhaps they can even make friends. The kids are not in the play. All we see are the parents. Now, one set of parents, the more middle-class parents are played by Marcia Gay Harden and James Gandolfini. And they've invited this other couple over to the house to try and, to see, obviously, if the other couple will pay the medical bills or the dental bills or stuff like that. The other couple is played by Hope Davis and,
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels, the marvelous Jeff Daniels. And he's a very high-powered corporate fellow who spins the PR. And his main thing is half the time he's on his cell phone because he's got this corporate disaster happening of this pill that the company that he represents has. And apparently this pill has side effects that the company doesn't really want to get out there to the media. And they found out about these side effects, and he's constantly on the phone trying to keep the pressure cooker down. But he's also part of this little get-together where he's also got to deal with what his son did. So that's what the whole story is. It's about them supposedly behaving in a civilized way and discussing how to make their children get through this issue and who's at fault and what. Well, this being theater and this being the way crazy parents with kids in ridiculously expensive schools behave, pretty soon things are flying, anger is exploding on all sides, everybody's confessing to terrible, miserable feelings, they hate each other, and lots of stuff going on. And it is, there's nothing surprising about it, because you know exactly where this play is going to go right from the very beginning. It is quite amusing for quite a while. But, to me, it is still a 55-minute play that has been pulled out to 90 minutes, so it'd be worth a full Broadway slot. It's kind of like Reza knows what she wants to say about these people. The name of the play is God of Carnage. They're going to turn into animals. They're going to be savage with each other because that is the nature of what people will do when they're up against it. But he makes this point within the first half hour. We don't need so much more of it because it becomes quite repetitious. And towards the end of it, it tries to go for a little something more serious, and that doesn't really work. And there are funny moments, and I think you've heard about the famous, I don't know if it's famous, but the big scene with Hope Davis.
No.
She does something on stage that is unexpected unless you've read the reviews. It's a physical act of comedy, a gross one.
Okay, well, let's not get into
that. That's mildly amusing, but not if you've seen South Park do it better and funnier. I mean, it's kind of interesting that suddenly Broadway discovers these things that animated cartoons discovered 5 years ago and did better. Like, you saw Shrek, right?
Yes.
Shrek, there's a big scene. Ooh, Fiona and Shrek are farting together. How cute. But Terrence and Philip did it first almost a decade ago in South Park.
Yes.
And funnier. And now we've got something that Monty Python did better 20 years ago. 20 years ago. In The Meaning of Life, that they're doing a God of Carnage too. So I don't think that's so great.
Well, it makes me wonder when people write these long, drawn-out plays, that why they think we want to sit in a theater to be bored for 90 minutes when we could sit in the theater and be entertained and interested for an hour, even with an intermission. You know what I mean? Why not make it a one act? Or, you know,
yeah.
Honestly, I would much rather sit in a short two-act show.
Oh, then a
long one-act.
Well, I mean, if there were more plot or there were more to it, the play could have held its 90 minutes.
But right,
it
was but why add that extra 30 minutes if you have?
Because she's just repeating the same themes over.
I know, but she couldn't cut.
She should have cut. I mean, that's my particular. And the one thing that the play has going for it, and I have to admit, I'm in the minority here, because a lot of the critics loved it. A lot of the critics I respect loved it. And audiences howling, and it's going to be a big hit. There's no question about it. And I'll give all due credit to the four actors. You know, we talk about ensemble awards. Well, most shows get ensemble awards because all the actors are good. But in this particular case, they really are terrific. Every single one of them. Marsha Gay Harden, Jeff Daniels, James Gandolfini, Hope Davis, who's just delightful. And great to see her on Broadway again. It's it is worth seeing, certainly, to see them. It just bothers me that people are calling this so hilarious and so wonderful and so funny. It's not so. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's good enough. The actors are terrific. And if you're going to see the acting, you will not be disappointed in God of Carnage. Now, there's another show that's kind of the reverse for me. See, God of Carnage is...
I'm playing next door, ironically.
Is it right next
door? Right next door.
God of Carnage, I might not have these niggling objections to if everybody wasn't saying it was so wonderful. Here's a show. It's a play called Impressionism that a lot of people, the critics, were going, and audiences are liking, whatever, and I'm kind of defending it and taking it to heart because I wanted them to like it better because I think it's kind of sweet. Why don't you tell everybody, Jeff, you saw Impressionism. What's it about, first of all?
Impressionism is about a guy who works at an art gallery with this woman, and I think he works there for free. He seems to volunteer his time.
I don't know how.
I don't know. And it's,
well, he's a professional photographer, so I guess that may be how he makes his money.
And they seem to have a little dalliance going between them at first. You're not sure where that
mm-hmm.
how deep the feelings are. But it's a woman who doesn't really want to sell anything that's in her gallery, and she wants to keep all her possessions, it seems. And this guy is teaching her how to let loose of them.
Right. Well, yeah, and also she's taught by him and by some of the other people who come into the gallery. And so we're really... What a lot of the critics have objected to is that the first early part of the play doesn't seem to go... I'm not going to say it doesn't go anywhere, but it seems to noodle around a lot. It seems to concentrate on very small things, like muffins.
Yeah, but the muffins are brought in later in the play.
Yes.
And I think you had to do that. And you had to do the things about the paintings that she didn't want to see, the mermaid. Because everything became relevant later.
Which is what theater is all about. That's what it is when you write a play. Not everything has to be laid out in front of you, gift-wrapped, and said, this is this, boom. And it's the opposite of God of Carnage. This mm-hmm. is like the playwright laying some little things in there, things that may not make complete sense or may not seem important at first, but they are going to have value later if you have a little patience.
Yeah, no, I tended to like it. This again, from what we had all read in the papers previous to its opening, was a two-act play that was worked down to a one-act, which is, again, why I said I'd rather have two acts, because I needed time to digest what it was, and it was a rather lengthy one-act play.
That is true.
I don't know why they insist on not putting a second intermission in. I don't know if it saves
money.
Well, it
does make it a significantly longer feeling evening with an intermission.
So what? It's not like you're running home for anything.
Well, I am. I'm running to catch a train, usually.
Well, you're an idiot with that. I've told you about that before. I don't let my life be run by train schedules, and that's why I can't stand the Long Island Railroad. And the 11:27, and I have to catch a 10:42, and the 9:58. I mean,
well, wouldn't it be wonderful if they came every half hour and then you wouldn't worry about it so much? But if they come every hour or more than an hour, I do worry, because if I miss my train, I don't want to be standing around for 59 minutes.
Yeah, but why do you want to be, you know, that's what's, that whole thing started with, the first time I ever saw stuff like that was like Westbury Music Hall, Music Fair, remember that?
Yeah.
And they'd have these shows there, usually starring Barbara Eden, And even though they weren't that good,
yeah,
you know, which they were fine, but the shows themselves were good. I mean, I'll never forget stuff like Will Rogers Follies, and towards the end where he's having this big catharsis, people are leaving because they want to be the first one out of the parking lot. They didn't want to get hit with this gigantic traffic jam, and it's like I just feel like people run out of the theater because they have to catch this train. It's like, and it's so funny because the last time we were going home, you asked me what train am I planning on getting, and my answer was,
whenever it is.
The next one.
The next one, yeah. Next one. I think that is a healthier and a better attitude, but I can't do it. I mean, I live my life by time clocks and trains,
terrible.
And I don't want to get... If I can get home at 12:30 instead of 2 in the morning, that makes a difference.
But you'd rather
life.
Have an ultra-long one-act play than a play that you can really enjoy and savor. If just because of a 15-minute intermission.
I don't think in this particular case, we're talking about the play Impressionism on Broadway,
right.
That it would have, I still think if they'd thrown an intermission in, people still would have complained about the first act being minor. If anything, the way it was said, oh, well, then things picked up in the second act.
Which is fine, but I would have liked to have just taken a break, because the end of the first act is pretty intense. You go, you know, you meet the African. You go to Africa. You right. go, you know, you meet the Muffin Man.
I have to say that is one of the things that really woke up. Well, not woke up the second, because I kind of like the play all the way through.
Well, the secondary characters were all terrific. Marsha Mason was fantastic.
Oh,
in
really?
The first
I thought she was a very minor role that she didn't. She was fine, but I think I don't know if that role was so important or as important as it ought to have been.
Oh, I thought it was really important because
it
brought... Remember, she was talking about pictures she wanted to bring to her daughter to make her daughter feel guilty. And then and then the way that the... Who is it, Diana Wiest? Who's the actress in the...
Oh, no, Joan Allen.
Joan Allen, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I love her and I like her. And by the way, Jeremy Irons is the guy.
Right.
And he's fantastic. I mean, the just rapport between the two of them is wonderful. But... The Joan Allen character is kind of
the gallery owner. Yeah.
Yeah, she has a whole different recollection of this, and we get into her, you know, her thoughts. You know, a lot of the scenes they go back to the thoughts of how these paintings are relating to different people.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I think that's wonderful. And I'd like to have taken the time to savor those scenes and go, oh, isn't that interesting? And I would like an intermission so I could sit and discuss with other people. Wow, I wonder, you know, because I didn't have any idea where anything was leading in this show. I mean, you had a little idea, but not really.
Well, I will
much.
Say it was a bit of a shock towards the very end when you realize it is going to be a romance. Because it's not really there. I mean,
no.
it just seems like they've got sort of a separate, they're working together, and then towards the very, very end of the play, he's like, oh, by the way. And I don't know if that worked for me. Because, come on, the guy's been working with her, next to her, for a year. Would he really take that long to confess that kind of a feeling?
To me, that was part of the wrap-up, to make it a 90 or 100-minute wrap-up. But... you know, to me, the play was much more about the paintings and people's relationships with the paintings and the photograph, you know, and how they get rid of it.
Hmm.
I mean, I was really like, you know, where he said, oh, you like the photograph? Take it.
Right.
She was having a hard time getting, she was giving an excellent price for this. And she couldn't release that picture of the mother and daughter. And she hated the fact that the mermaid was a poster.
Mm.
I mean, I hate it. I mean, and the what was it? It wasn't a lithograph.
It was aquatint.
It was aquatint.
And I remember the critics and some of it was saying when they first wrote about Impressionism, they said, oh, you know, the playwright is dwelling on this stupid stuff like cupcakes and muffins and whether it's a lithograph or an aquatint. And yes, it is germane.
But it's such an interesting thing because, well, it comes out, there's some great lines that come out from the aquatint thing, and, you know, I could say about it.
And the more you talk about the play, the more now I even like it, because you're reading deep stuff into it that makes me want to see it again to really kind of suss it, because I was missing stuff and all these connections between, I mean, I was seeing it, but as you said, because it all goes by in one act and kind of a thing.
That's why you need an intermission.
Okay, you know, yeah.
And I got that a lot with the Marsha Mason character, because even though she was hilarious.
But let's please make the time to also, to talk about Andre the Shields.
Oh, Andre the Shields is the best thing in the play.
Exactly. Well, I mean,
Andre the Shields plays two very different characters, and he brings life. He brings a lot of humanity. You have to remember the two main characters were not that human. The people they came into are human. The Marsha Mason character was human because she wanted something, and she was the realist. She was buying it with money, but she was not going to pay full retail for that. You know, and she wanted to give it as something that would kind of almost hurt her daughter.
Right.
Rather than it was a good memory. And then there was the one guy from, what was it, TV's, The Pretender was in it.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember,
his name. And he came in, and he talked about, he was supposedly a very wealthy man, and he talked about this photograph.
Right. You know? I didn't want to...
But Andre de Shields.
We neglected Andre de Shields, and I was going to say a little while back that in that second, I was going to say the second act, in the second half of the show, when you're still wondering, is this really going to pull together? Is this going to pick up? And then de Shields makes an appearance as the Baker character, and it just,
because
from then on, for the rest of the show, I was totally with it.
Because Andre de Shields brought in more humanity. And
he boosts the energy, too.
He brought in the loving aspect of everything, and that's where the love turned, because it was just the fact that he cared about her enough to bring her this very special muffin that he only made on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, you know. And he knew that something was wrong because she didn't stop for the muffin.
And it was a selfless act that causes her to do itself. Yeah, I mean, it's true.
It was
a nice play. Everybody, I'm recommending, and I think Jeff is recommending too, Impressionism.
Yeah,
Jeff is just recommending that they add an intermission. We get it.
That's the only thing. I mean, I just get so mad when you make me sit through these things. It's like, okay, I like it. Give me a little break here, because I just want to refresh myself.
Hmm.
You know, it's like sometimes.
Yeah, but I would love that if Broadway would make its intermissions 8 to 10 minutes long, not 15 to 20.
How can you make it 8 to 10 minutes long?
Because everybody's up and going to the bathroom. That's the problem. If the bathrooms were bigger, if they could knock through some walls and add more urinals and things in the women's room, not urinals in the women's room, but.
But if you did, but why would they do that when they're only used 8 minutes a day then?
Huh? Oh, well.
It's an 8 minute.
No, but that's the problem. Intermissions very often are a lot about not just selling drinks in the back.
Of course. It's about the bathroom.
Well, people waiting online in the bathroom. So that's why, you know, I would really, if they can cut it down to a one act, I'm not so against that.
No, I am.
As long as the one act is within the 90 minute, once the one act goes past 90 minutes.
And this was way past 90 minutes.
Did it really? I thought it only went to about an hour 40.
No.
It was not 2 hours without intermission. I certainly didn't feel like it to me.
No, it wasn't 2 hours, but an hour 45, an hour 50, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah, that is pushing it. But I guess I didn't mind the way you did.
Like I said, and it wasn't because I didn't like the show.
Okay. I want to talk, by the way, we're doing Inside Broadway here on this very No, I've changed the theme, you know that.
I know, but I like that theme.
Now
better.
It's from West Side Story. Da, 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 Inside Broadway.
I know, but I like the other theme.
As part of Dave's Gone By, I just want to mention a couple of off-Broadway shows that I've seen recently and wanted to share my thoughts of with you. I don't know if that's a complete sentence or not.
Please share us your thoughts of.
Well, they've revived Our Town again in a production coming from. What do you mean, What do you mean,
again.
Jeff Goodman?
Why don't we do a show with no set? And go ahead.
Well, actually, this one does have a set, but you only see it for a short amount of time, which is one of the quote-unquote surprises of this production that came out of Chicago, directed and starring David Cromer. He's this hot, young-ish director from the Midwest. He also did that sleeper last season, The Adding Machine, where they did that musical that shouldn't have been any good at all, and it turned out to be. And one of the reasons it was so good was it was really well directed. Well, Cromer has now worked a bit of his magic on Our Town. Granted, one of the great war horses of American theater, but it is also, as much as it is a war horse, it is also truly a great work of art. And so it's always good to see Our Town. And they do it, there's a lot of, you know, the Shakespeare line, 2 hours of traffic on the stage. This has legitimate, real traffic. They're doing it in this smallish theater with thrust stage, nothing really much, just chairs with the audience on three sides around them. And costumes, not really of the period, for the most part. They seemed almost more modern than anything else. Nothing particularly special there. And a lot of people walking around, coming in, going out. They're getting the life of the town, really, through movement and through just the way that people are interacting with each other, rather than sort of that old way of doing Our Town, where everybody's set in a kitchen, even though the kitchen doesn't have appliances. They're just mining, doing all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here they're not only mining, everything is mined. There's nothing there except chairs and an open space. Not even really, they have a back wall to work with, but that's about it. Well, you know the story of Our Town. Why don't you share the what happens? No? You've forgotten the story of Our Town? Oh, well.
It's about a lot of boring people in the town.
You don't like Our Town?
I really don't like that. I'm not a crazy
Did you see the Paul Newman? I missed the Paul Newman
No,
one.
I didn't get to see that.
What about the great, and still my favorite one, with Spalding Gray?
Yes.
That converted me for all time into an Our Town fan. No? Why do you find it boring?
I don't know. There's no sense. It's nothing interesting for my eye to look at. There's nothing, you know. And it's like, you know, maybe I hate to even admit this, but maybe that's why I'm not a good reader. Maybe I don't have, like, such a great visual imagination.
Mm.
You know, if it's not very, you know, these very descriptive, flowery, descriptive pieces bore me to tears.
It's not flowery. Well, I mean, the narrator has some description, obviously, but It's
I don't know. It's just
the element.
It's never been one of my favorite plays.
I'm sorry to hear that. It is, for me, one of my very favorite plays. It's elemental. It's simply life in a small town centering on two families in which the young man and the young girl end up getting married, and then some other stuff happens that I don't want to ruin for folks who don't know the play. And this is, it's kind of hard to ruin Our Town. I mean, they do it in high schools and, I guess, junior high schools, and it still works because you see the kids doing it.
I know.
It's really hard to mess up Our Town, so David Cromer certainly does not mess it up. He does a very fine job. Is it my favorite? No. I miss Spalding Gray, and I missed how moved I was by, when I saw it with Eric Stoltz and Penelope Ann Miller, how nice that romance was. But it's very well done here, too, and I liked the two actors playing the young people. Jennifer Grace plays Emily. She's a Chicago actress. And it's amazing. She's got three different scenes, because there are three. This is a show you would like, because it's only 2 hours and 10 minutes, and there are two intermissions within. So no act is longer than, like, 50 minutes. And Grace, in each of them, is quite different. She's a believable young girl, probably about 14, 15. Then she's a lovely bride, and then we see her in the last act as a much more mature kind of a person, even though only a few more years have passed. And really, really, she's quite terrific. And then the guy who's playing George, James McMenamin, very well cast, because he really feels like an average, typical teenager. I mean, he's a very good actor in the sense that it isn't just an actor playing a teenager. We really, from the haircut to the look of him to just the way he behaves, we just feel like, oh, this is just a teen guy. And that's pretty good acting right there. So there are a couple of eccentric moments in this Our Town that the director throws in. There's one point when, for no real reason, he slams his boots on a table. And then there's another where he goes for a big audience laugh that's really unnecessary on one very, very minor character doing something kind of silly. No need. No need. The play doesn't need it. And he also goes for super heightened realism in the last act, where we've had no sets and nothing at all, and then for the third act and a certain portion of it, suddenly the curtains open and we're in an actual incredibly realistic kitchen morning set with bacon frying, and they're actually frying bacon on stage. And I'm sitting there and I'm smelling the bacon, and I'm not concentrating on the play at that point because I want bacon. Mm-mm, bacon strips.
Well, I know. You're like that dog in the commercial.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand what he was going for, but once you start having smell in the theater, it is not contributing. It's taking away. A set, fine. Props, fine. Even pouring water or running water or something, or plugging a lamp in for a real electric thing. But if you're going to have food cooking,
don't
I've
make
seen
a bacon.
This time and again, it's all it is distracting. It's like when you're in a theater where there isn't anything involved with food in the actual show, but it's towards the end of the first act and you smell that they're brewing coffee in the lobby. You ever have that? And it's sort of like,
yes.
And your mind is going, play, but coffee. But play, but coffee. You know.
But let me tell you, I've also been in shows where you have to eat on stage.
Oh, yeah?
And that is really horrible. So, I mean, I wish it were the real things, because I've had to have breakfast on stage a number of times.
Well, by the time you get it, it's probably cold, and it's not what it really is supposed
no.
to be. No,
yeah. No, you get a lot of food coloring.
Oh.
It's and that's the problem with this smell-less food, because when you make eggs on stage, it's usually cream of wheat with food color, with a blob of yellow in the middle.
Oh, my. No, well, at least I'll give them this. I bet the actors wanted to eat the food because they used real eggs and real bacon, but they didn't get to eat. That's the sad part. In the scene doesn't go on long enough.
But I'm telling you, it's like, I wish, because in the one play I'm thinking about, there actually was cooking, and she had to plate the scrambled eggs, and of course, it's just, you know,
cream
she's cooking
beef on something.
She's
yeah.
just moving around some cream of wheat, and I'm going, and I'll never forget this. In my head, I'm doing my lines. I'm going, please, Pat, don't give me too much. And it depends on how she likes you that day. Because we had to finish our food.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
I kind of pissed her off one day. And I did get, like, a humongous plate of scrambled eggs, cream of wheat. It was like, oh, my God. And I just saw, and that's the things people play, you know, the games they play on you on stage. It's like, she goes, because I just knew, what I did wrong to her. And I saw it in her face when she would turn upstage.
Yeah.
And I got the look, and I went, oh, okay, I'm going to hate this. And
did you have to talk while you were eating?
Oh, yeah. Well, you had, you know, when haven't you, you didn't, haven't acted a lot, have you?
Not a lot, no.
Okay. Because this show, it was quite a lot you had to do, and you had to eat in rhythm, too.
Oh, man.
It was like, so I kind of knew, you know, what you're trying to do is you're trying to take your biggest mouthfuls in the beginning, so you can kind of keep having and having and having.
Don't hit the table.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
So it's just horrible because I just had all this cream of wheat to eat, and then I'd have to swallow and say my line. That was like, it was killing my timing. That was a comedy.
Oh,
so it was like.
So wait, I know the two shows you were in. Was it either The Foreigner or?
Well, it was The Foreigner.
Yeah,
was this
okay.
one. This one that was like, you know, there was the scene, the mirror image scene where he eats.
Well,
the
let
egg.
Me ask you something. Why couldn't they just make eggs?
What?
Why do you have to be cream of wheat?
Oh,
why?
Because eggs, well, first of all, you can't have that runny egg center, and it just had to be something you can swallow without being, you know, and it had to be able to stay. I mean, if you had cold eggs, that would be worse, and the consistency of egg, you can't get it all off the plate.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So what you get is something, I mean, you know, sometimes they sugar it, and sometimes they forget to sugar it. Because if it was like sugar cream of wheat, it was like, okay.
Maple syrup would work.
Yeah, but maple syrup, it's also, it has to do with It's very. I don't know how they figure out what it is that you eat, but it's something with cream wheat. It's easily digested. It doesn't affect too much anyone. Any you know, badly.
It's diarrhea on stage.
Well, yeah, well, you know, it could be. You know, you sit there and all of a sudden you have to go to the bathroom.
You know, that's next, by the way. That's got to be because now they've done. What have they done? They've done farting in Shrek. They've done some other bodily excretion in this play.
And we've had sex in
God of Carnage.
We've had sex in many plays.
Right.
We've had masturbation in several.
And Sam Shepard's Curse of the Starving Class has onstage urination. The only thing left is poops. The only thing left is diarrhea. There's got to be...
poop?
And don't forget Urinetown, although I don't know if anybody actually pees in Urinetown.
Yep. It's not... Well, they don't. Well, they go to the bathroom a lot.
Yeah, but you don't actually see...
No.
Curse of the Starving Class, at least the production I saw, I was like, oh my God.
Someone has to pee?
On stage, yeah.
On
command, I mean, they had like a tube thing. Or, yeah, at a certain moment in the play, someone takes a wee-wee. A long one, too. It was, yeah, it's a strange... It's a good play, though.
I'm sure people are just running to see it now.
No, but it's actually one of
the finish up Our Town before...
Well, I am finished with that. I'm going to give it a solid recommendation. It's a great, great play and a very, very good production. So everybody go down and see Our Town, even if you have seen it before. It's always worth seeing it again if it's a good production, and this one is. Now, the one other show I'm saving, since we're talking about diarrhea, I'm saving the crap for last. But I'm not spelling it C-R-A-P. I'm spelling it K-R-A-P-P, the way Samuel Beckett did in his play Crap's Last Tape. Now, that was... there's a show for you that's 55 minutes or 45 minutes, no intermission, one act. And it's all about this man just going into his seniorhood. I think he's 69 years old. And he's making an audio tape, but also playing audio tapes of himself 20 years earlier, talking about his life, and now he's trying to figure out where his life went wrong, and his life may kind of be coming to an end. I've never really had much use for the play, maybe because I just never had seen a good production of it. I'm not the hugest Beckett fan, but it is one of his major theatrical works. Have you ever seen Crap's Last Tape?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of it, Jeff?
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
But, like you said, it's very hard with one person. We haven't discussed in a long time my love of one-person shows.
you say that sarcastically, yeah.
Yes, I'm not a big fan of them, so...
They can be great, but Kraft's Last Tape has never done it for me. Well, here's... This is
maybe
like
Bobby Moore should do it.
But here's the ultimate mega-theater idea. There's a play called Crap 39. That a younger actor has done. He's a fellow named Michael Lawrence, and he is... It's sort of based on his life. Let me see if I can explain this properly. I'll probably get it all confused. But when he was 29, he performed Crap's Last Tape and taped it, audio-taped it. So now he's 39, and he's listening back to the tapes of himself doing Crap's Last Tape, and he's also documenting himself now at 39, his marriage, his fatherhood, and also his not-so-amazing career in theater and what he's been doing for all these years, and also his relationship to Samuel Beckett and to the play. Now, sounds like it could be very pretentious and high, but it isn't.
Oh,
like
it sounds
that at all.
Very open and honest, actually.
Yeah. And that's what's cool about it. He plays answering machine messages to and from himself, from his friends, and discussing the play, and also discussing what's going wrong with his life. He also is really, really clever in what he does. It's multimedia. So all the props that he uses are laid out on this table, but we can't really see them very well from where we are, so he's a lot of the times holding a video camera. And while he's talking or while he's playing messages or playing audio, he's moving over the table with the video camera, and we're watching on a screen an object that may figure into what he's is being talked about. And it's very, very cleverly done. So I've got to give it to him. He's taken, for me, a not terribly interesting play and made something of a more interesting piece. I have to confess my fault. When I went to see it, I was exhausted. I had come from conference thing. And
it's a crazy time in Broadway.
I had a busy, very busy
as
week.
We discussed about an hour and a half ago. Oh, by the way, Inside Broadway, well after 1 o'clock, by the way.
Well after 1. Yeah, that's right. We are here well after 1 o'clock.
It's an hour since we started Inside Broadway.
Well, I wish I had been a little more alert because I'm going to give it a recommendation, but I have to say I had a lot of trouble keeping my eyes open through parts of it. But I don't blame the actor and I don't blame the piece. I think it's a very interesting show. But I do have to be honest and say I was fighting the old demon Sandman.
Now, was this his own production, or was this part of the Soho Rep production?
Oh, I don't know. It's at Soho Playhouse, not Soho Repertory Theater.
Oh.
Okay. So, yeah, no, it's probably a rental. I don't know who the actual producer is. Maybe he's a co-producer of it.
This sounds like a wonderful little...
I recommend it. It's a real... I wish I'd seen it under a different frame of mind where I've been... 11 in the morning, where I'd be
maybe
bright-eyed
and bushy-tailed. Maybe go back to see it over the summer.
Yeah, but it's still playing. I think it's only running another couple of weeks.
Oh.
But
maybe we'll tape it and watch it in 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, I like the car, and I like the way he's doing it. And he's planning on doing something else when he's 59 years old. Just like crap. He's going to wait 20 years and then probably reflect on this piece as well. So it becomes this lifelong mega theater kind of thing.
You're now part of the... You are going to be part of the next show.
Well, just my being in the audience?
Yeah. And you're reviewing it because you've actually affected his life.
Well, in a manner of speaking, who knows? I doubt it, but who knows? You know.
Maybe he'll play this radio show on the next...
I'll send it to him. I'll send him the review, and maybe he'll read from the reviews, and he'll, you know.
It's like the mirror in the mirror in the mirror in the mirror in the mirror.
Or the, I'm tired now, so I'm going to blow the joke. What's that chorus line song? All I need is the mirror in the mirror.
All I need is the music and the mirror.
And the mirror, yeah. That wasn't good. It wasn't a good joke to begin with.
No, it wasn't.
I shouldn't have remembered it. Thank you, Jeff.
That was 2/3 of that pun.
When did we start Inside Broadway, Jeff?
About an hour ago.
I love it when we run Dave's Gone By Overtime. There's nothing quite like it.
Because we really run this hour show into the ground for about 3 hours.
Well, yeah, but I'm having a great time. And by the way, we are not quite ready to leave yet. We're going to do a little more stuff here.
We'll probably last till at least 2:15.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So don't go away. We've got more Dave's Gone By as we move back into the neighborhood from Inside Broadway. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Can I go off on a little something today?
Yeah. It's 1:49 in the morning. Why not?
Okay. Well, one of the other things, because when you're speaking about bills and stuff like that, one of the bills that really, really bothers me are the tax bills.
Oh, bills. You mean bills like you get in the mail?
Yeah.
Bills. Yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but I live in a community where we have a very high school tax.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, just like you, I have no children. And do you think, the two things that, about this. I've often thought that if you don't have any children, you should have a lower tax because you're not putting any children into the school district. And number two is that when your tax bill should lower a little bit when you get older because, you know, because it's funny that your tax bill lowers when you get older because you get the senior citizens break.
Hmm.
But how about the people who never had the kids? It's like there's no big break for them. And one of my neighbors had 11 children and one had 9. And I'm sitting here going, well, I guess it averages out because I have none. You know?
I'm so in agreement with you about school taxes because they're brutal where we live. If it were just federal and state taxes and other stuff like that, and even our almost 9% sales taxes, all right, we deal. But our school taxes are what kill us. I mean, I've told this to everybody. I have a mortgage. You know, you're lucky enough. You're free and clear. You just pay taxes.
Yeah.
You don't have a mortgage. I still have a mortgage. In fact, we refinanced last year, so I still have 29 more years on my mortgage. You know, I was down to 20 and went back up to 29. And what's happening? The payment that I make to my bank every month. That my wife and I make to the bank every month.
Oh, is the actual segment that amount, we mentioned that you're not gay, you're married?
No, I wanted to say, I wanted to make it clear that it isn't just my money.
Okay.
Or yeah, but I am married and I am heterosexual. Thank you, Jeff. Very heterosexual. I like women. I like women, and I don't sleep with men. I just wanted to get that out there because you made me get that out there now. So yes, I am heterosexual,
and a little homophobic.
Maybe a little. Not really.
A little.
Only when I'm in a really bad mood or I've seen too many gay plays.
No. You're a little homophobic when people think you're gay.
Yeah, okay, that's true. That is very true. I don't know why, not that it's a bad thing, but I don't want to be mistaken for what I'm not.
Okay, back to school taxes.
So, when I pay, my taxes are bundled into my mortgage payment to the bank. So I don't have a lump sum every year or twice a year to the tax guy. It's going to the bank when I pay my mortgage for... It includes the school taxes and the federal and whatever. So, when I write that check, the amount on that check is 2.5 times what my actual mortgage payment is. I am paying more in taxes than I am for my actual monthly mortgage payment. Not just more, but more than double. That is the amazing thing.
I am so tired of people going, but it's for the children.
Well, that's the other part of it. No, I don't have children. And they can say, well, then move to an area where the schools aren't as great because it doesn't matter, or move to an area where it isn't necessarily this particular area. Part of the thing is it's a place to raise a family and raise children. You don't want that? Don't move here. But if you do move here, don't bitch about the school taxes. But at the same time, you've got to have some kind of level where it stops. Even... You know, because school taxes here were always high, but they made some sense in relation to the town being kept up and the children being smart and all the other good things that you get or have gotten over the years from living in Long Island, a decent police force, fire trucks everywhere when you need them, nice trees, good garbage collection, good signs, I mean, you know, stuff like that. Okay, it's cool, but the school taxes are nuts.
I know.
And the fact is, if you have 5 or 6 children in the public school system, sure, it's great, you're using that to your advantage. I do think that if you don't have any kids, or if you have fewer kids, it should be a graded scale. I'm not saying it should be so much, because that's not really fair.
No, my thing is, I think you should say, okay, you can 2 kids is probably a good average or a good place to start, and say if you have... 1 to 3 kids, you pay the same tax. And then if you have no kids, you get a little break.
Right.
Not a big break, a little break. But after...
Like 10%.
But after, like, the 5th kid, you should start paying a little more. You know, pay up for your kids. I mean, how about the Octomom? What's she going to get? What's she going
to
pay?
Like, those kids are never going to make it to school. They'll be homeschooled.
Yeah, anyway, but in all seriousness, and then they do stuff like... And then they want to add taxes because they want, they want to build a pool in the school. They want to have this.
Oh,
extra
they need
sport.
A new track.
Yeah,
it's always for gym crap. You know, it's never for theater. It's never for. Although some high schools actually have amazing theater departments, but it's always about. Well, we need new basketballs. Our team needs uniforms or trophies. That stuff.
And they start, you know. It's to me, it's great when it's on fundraising, but then they start adding it into the budget.
Mm.
And it's like,
you want to have a cupcake sale for certain things, that's totally cool. You know, the raffle or guilt parents into paying $5 for a box of chocolate-covered something. It goes to support some stupid thing at the school. All right, hey, it's extra, it's not coming out of taxes, and if people want to pony up, that's wonderful, that's fine. But
why do I have to pay for a new track so your son can run on the same Olympic track that Carl Lewis?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm sorry. And especially, I mean, this was even before we had the recession. I was thinking, because I don't make, obviously, a whole heck of a lot of money in my life.
We're making a fortune here. Who are we kidding?
Yeah. And it just amazed me because I was in North Dakota visiting about 6 weeks ago, back when the weather was actually pretty nice for North Dakota. It was only raining and sleeting. It wasn't snowing and flooding. But I was in Fargo, North Dakota.
See what happens when they don't offer your wife a job? They are the wrath of God.
God's revenge on them. It's true, man. It's true.
And you actually want to move there.
Well, it was kind of sweet. But then again, we weren't there for 8 months during horrible winter flooding and frozen tundra.
And you're just a trailing spouse anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But looking just for the hell of it at real estate out there, and the fact that a house, a nice little house, is $120,000, you know, and the taxes are $3,000, you can live like that. And it's not as if, okay, maybe their services are not as much, and maybe their downtown is not like Long Island downtown, and blah, blah. Still, do taxes really have to push from $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 for a normal, whatever, 60 by 100 basic cape kind of house?
60 by 100, three bedroom, one bath, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it amazed, even when we went to Ohio, okay, it was a little more in Ohio, so the houses there were more like $200,000 for an equivalent kind of housing.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it was $3,000-$4,000, and they felt their taxes were high at $4,000.
Yeah.
But they got a lot of malls there, so I guess those had to be kept up. I don't get it. I something has to, and nothing's ever done, as you said, Jeff. As you said, people don't do anything about, they bitch about taxes left and right, but when it comes to the schools, the children, gotta have everything for the children. And I'm like, you know what? The children will do just fine. They don't need every perfect penny out of our pockets.
Yeah.
So that we're all poor.
They don't have the absolute newest in computers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wherever they work, they're going to have the absolute newest.
Yeah, and I think there was a thing of trying to get, in our district, like a computer for every kid coming up through the school system.
Oh, that, yeah,
they all want a laptop.
They want to give them all laptops.
And I'm like, you know what? Give them a kick in the lap.
Let me tell you, I think maybe give every resident a laptop. I'm all for that.
Well,
you want to make it. You want to make it even.
Yeah.
Then, you know, if you're going to buy people laptops, I don't know why some kid going to school deserves a laptop more than me.
Right. You know, because I guess the assumption is that kid could grow up to be the nuclear physicist who cures cancer. That kid could be the next Obama.
And I need to see porn. Well, same thing.
So do they. Well, no, they probably have to spend an extra $1 billion of our tax money on filters.
No, that's right. But they also have to send the, you know, that mail, that, what is it, where they send the naked pictures to the mail? I forget what they're calling it. You hear about this?
Text phone things or no?
Yeah, they're sending pictures through phones and on email, and girls are taking naked pictures of themselves. But there are a couple instances where the girl will text the guy and send a picture of herself.
Yeah.
And then he'll show it to his friends, either through forwarding emails or whatever.
Yeah.
And they have been arrested for child pornography.
Oh, well, that's right. I read about that. That's because... Now, did the woman who sent the thing, or no, it's the guy who gets it and then forwards it. Well, it's an underage girl.
I know, but, you know.
I know, it's pushy, it's very definitely, but then again, it's a statutory thing because the guy's underage too, so how can, you know.
It's weird. But anyway, but God forbid we don't have that in our school system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we just have drugs.
No, I said, but, you know, even better computers, you know.
Don't forget to go to YouTube and look for Shalom Dammit, Rabbi Saul Solomon's show. Don't forget to go to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Don't forget to go to TogleTheater.com. And especially, please go to DavesGoneBy.org to find out more about this program, the history of the show. You can hear, I didn't even get to say this. You can hear more than 200 episodes for free anytime at all, just by going to davesgoneby.org. We've got the archives up there. They sound really great. You don't have to even download them on your computer if you're afraid the files are big or if you're afraid about viruses, not that there are any, but you can just stream them on your computer, too. There's a couple of different ways to listen. Just go to davesgoneby.org and look for the archive section and hear bunches of episodes. We finally added some new ones, but they're actually older ones going all the way back to November and December of 2003, including some terrific shows with the band October Project and Stefan Zucker, the opera fanatic. So don't miss it. Go to davesgoneby.org. And remember, May 5th, Tuesday night at the Players Theater on McDougal Street, I start my new live talk show. It's not on the radio. It's an actual live cabaret talk show that's also being taped for webcast on StageBuddy.com. It's called Stage Buddy Talk, and our first guest that night will be Melba Moore, and we've got some other really cool guests who are going to be part of that as well, so don't miss it. I want to thank my guest co-host, Jeff Goodman, for hanging with me these four wonderful happy hours. Thank you, Jeff Goodman. Sleepy Jeff. You're like Sleepy Jeff of the Wiggles. Mike, I really appreciate all your help and for the energy and the fun that you bring to this program every time you're here. So, let me just crank this over to make sure we're playing the last thing of the night. Huh, it's 2:58 a.m. We get to do one more legal ID.
You're listening to WGBB Freeport.
Yes, you are, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you also to James and Michelle and the Gospel folks for letting us be on at this hour tonight on WGBB. So, happy Passover, happy Easter, happy everything, everybody. Make it a good week. Don't get into a Binghamton mood. Make it a Passover mood. Don't be vindictive like God.
Be happy like Jesus.
Well, no. Jesus he had a bad mood too. Who can be happy like Mr. Rogers, or what's very Passover-ish?
The Indira Gandhi.
Eat lots of matzah. That would be a good thing. Be like the Gandhi. Well, yeah. I don't know who you should be like. Just make it a good one. Feel good.
And be like Ike. People liked him.
This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
One reminder. Before, the other thing is, we will not be here next week. We will not be here the week after that.
We won't be here for the rest of the month of March.
No, we won't be here for the rest of the month of March or April either. This is April. Oh. That's how exhausted we are, ladies and gentlemen. No, because I'm going away. So our next Dave's Gone By is
and
going to
thank
be
the National Endowment for the Arts.
Well, yes.
I'd like to thank them for taking Dave away.
In a straitjacket, probably. So, yeah. I'm starting to sound like Diane Keaton and Annie Hall. Not only is, May 3rd is when we will be back with a new episode of Dave's Gone By, back from L.A., and back with bunches of things to talk about, and hopefully have enough time, like we did tonight, to talk about them. So everybody, be well. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night.
Happy Passover, happy Easter, happy everything. And gone by.
Dave's gone by. There goes Dave.